In the parsha begins. Parsha Lech Lecha is a very beautiful parsha. It's a long parsha. A lot of many yesodos in Yadus are presented in Lech Lecha. Okay, let's start out with an idea. It really takes us back to Parshas Noach. Parshas Noach. Last week we spent time discussing one of the first Rashi's of Noach Ish Tzadik. Tamim haya bidai roisav. So this is, again, I know it's Parashas Lech Lecha, but that Rashi in Parashas Noach, I think, opens up a revelation about what exactly is happening in Parashas Lech Lecha. Now, last week we spent time analyzing this Rashi, and we said a couple of ideas. I want to present a different idea, which I think is really more accurate than the things that we said last week. Rashi in last week's parasha, on the word bidoy roisav, in his generations, makes a diuk, and compares, says, Noach was a tzaddik. But where was he a tzaddik? I'm the wrong parasha. He was a tzaddik bidoy roisav. I'll read you the Rashi. Yesh meirabay seinu, Darshim Oisoy L'Shavach. There are those of our rabbis that expound upon this word for good. Kol Shekain, certainly She'ilu Hoya Bidor Tzadikim Hoya Tzadik Yoiser. He would have been even a greater Tzadik. The Yesh Shedarshim Oisoy L'Gnai Lefi Doiroi Hoya Tzadik The Ilu Hoya Bidoroi Shel Avraham Lo hoya nechshav lechlum. What does that mean exactly? Okay, so you can twist and turn this many ways. When I learned this, when they taught this to us in kindergarten, they taught us the basic pshat is that these two opinions they basically disagree. The yesh merabay seinu and the yesh and the chedoshim l'shevach disagree 180 degrees with those who doresh l'gnai. The Yesh Rabbi Seinu said that he was a great person, and he would have been even greater if he was living with tzaddik. And those that say l'gnai, he wasn't so great. He was nothing. He wasn't so great. The litmus test to determine his greatness would be to put him in another generation. Yavir a person, right now he appears to be a tzaddik, but if you really want to know what's under the hood, you got to do a test. So if you put this person in another generation, if he becomes even better, that shows, that he's a real, when it says here that he's a tzaddik, it means a tzaddik grade A. And the other opinion says, no, the result of the test would be that if you would put Noach in the generation of Avraham Avinu, he wouldn't be such a tzaddik. So that means that when it says now in Parsha, so the Noach is a tzaddik, it means a tzaddik of grade C. Now, what is that? What I just said over here doesn't really make all that much sense because you don't really think about it all that much. And it doesn't make sense at all what I just said. Again, okay, just because there are too many loose ends that need more clarification. Let me try to explain now what I believe what it really, really means. And by doing so, it will open up a whole new approach to look at Parashas Lech Lecha. First of all, the two sides of the coin, the Yesh Merabasinu Sher Dorshim Oisai L'Shevach, and the Yesher Dorshim L'Gnai, do not argue. They are on the same page. There is absolutely no disagreement between Noach, between the Yesher Abaseinu Shedorshim L'Shevach, the Yesher Dorshim L'Gnai. Rashi would not quote an opinion that goes against Yesher Abaseinu if they were wrong. They are both 100% correct. It's like a cup that's half full. The optimist, a cup, I shouldn't say that, the 50% line. You have a glass of water, that is at the 50% line. So the optimist says it's half full, and the pessimist says it's half empty. Noach was like a glass of water that has marks, and the water reached 50%. That's number one. So they're both right. There's an element of truth in what both of them said, but let me explain. The next thing we need to understand, what does it mean a tzaddik? What is the definition of a tzaddik? Tzaddik can mean many things. Tzaddik is used in many different forms. There are many different ways the word tzaddik is used. There's Yosef at tzaddik. We find Noach is tzaddik. Rashi throws around the word over here, the word tzaddik. When it comes to Avram, when he's mispalef for Sodom, it says, Ula yesh chamidir tzaddikim, chamishim tzaddikim, Hashem ha-tzaddik, va'ani horisho, and paru is said to Hashem that he's a tzaddik. The word tzaddik is a very vague word, and it all depends on the context, how we translate the word. I want to suggest that in the context of Noach ish tzaddik, what it means is, he was a mashpia. One of the examples of the way we use the word tzaddik is a person who has influence, a person who teaches, who gives out. You can have a person that sits in the room all alone the whole day, no one knows that he exists, and he does his own thing, he doesn't bother anyone. So you'll say he's a tzaddik, he didn't do any averos, he did not harm anyone. It's definitely true. He's a very great person, and he learns, and he davens as Yerush Shemayim, and he keeps to himself. Absolutely. But then there are people who go out there into the world with a mission to bestow benefit. Chesed. The Ribbono Shel Olam's nature is to bring chesed. Olam chesed yibaneh. Hashem built this world because he has a mission to bestow upon his creatures kindness. A tzaddik, in the context that I'm trying to put Noach in, when the pasuk says Noach ish tzaddik, what it means is that Noach was a person who was tried to influence, a person who radiated with goodness, with kindness, with a mission to reveal Hashem's presence in this world. And the proof to that is, Noach was assigned a task to save the world. Noach wasn't a lemachal, sat in the house in the basement, in quarantine and lockdown, and didn't want to come out. Noach was assigned a task to go out into the world in the most public way to build this massive teva, and everyone should talk about it for 120 years, and use that as a tool to tell the world there is a creator, there is a Ribbono Shel Olam, and he's not happy with the way you're behaving, and he wants you to do teshuva and to become better people. Noach was a man of influence. A tzaddik means to influence other people for the better. Noach lived in his generation. Noach dealt with people who were obviously problematic, and Noach, he didn't succeed. He didn't succeed. I mean, he saved the world, he saved all the animals, he saved himself, his children, and the animals. But the people, pretty much, they didn't accept his mussar. Maybe they were mahara b'tshuva before they died. Maybe there was some accomplishment. Maybe before they left, they were mahara. It's finally sunk in all of the mussar, and they left the world with a hirhur of teshuva, which granted them a chelik in olam haba. We don't know what happened at the very, very end, but it was not enough that they would do teshuva that they could survive into the next generation. Yesh merabai seinu shedorshim oser l'shevach. What would have been if Noach would have lived in a generation of tzaddikim? So I'm trying to suggest what it means is very simple. If Noach lived in a generation where there were other good people, he would have been able to make them even better. He would have been able, if you're dealing with people who are good, why do they go to yeshiva? A person who has talent, he knows how to write. Why does he go to a special school for gifted children to He knows how to write. He already got an A on all of the... No, you have talent. We're going to take that talent and we're going to develop it even further. If you have a skill, a child that has a natural skill, I'm calling that child a tzaddik. You take that child that has that skill, which I'm calling, he has a good skill in any matter. Let's just borrow the term. He's a mathematician. He has a koyach of writing. He has a koyach of creativity in designing. You take that child and you send him to a special school where the world-renowned experts can take the potential, the skill, and develop it much, much more. If Noach was obviously a person who was charismatic, had influence, and was able to change people, Hashem would not have selected Noach to build the Teva unless Noach had the ability, the koyach, to influence people and to change them. They came by, what are you building, Noach? What are you doing over here? And he would sit down with them, engage them in a conversation, and try to persuade them to do teshuvah. That's why he was selected.
Was that effective?
No, he failed. I told you, we don't know what it means effective. Because like I said before, just because they all died doesn't mean that Noach was not successful, at least, in bringing these people to Olam Haba. When they died...
It's like saying the operation was successful, but the patient died.
Well, there's a principle throughout Chazal all over. When a person dies, he should be mahara b'shuva. And there are so many different stories in the Gemara where a person did averos their whole life, and at the time of their death, Talmidei Chacham came to speak to them and to persuade them to do teshuva the very last moments, not to leave this world in a state of rebellion, to leave this world, even though it's true that they're not leaving over much because they've lived a life of avera, but there is something to it. That to leave this world being maharer b'shuva. The Ribbono Shel Olam selected Noach because it's obvious he had power, he had talent in dealing with people, in being able to persuade them to change their way of living. Did he fail? Pretty much, yes, from our perspective, because all of these people died, they perished. Did he fail entirely? You can't say that. Because, you know, at least he saved himself. At least he saved his family. He saved the animals. And who's not to say that when all of these people died, when the Mabul finally came and they all perished, when they were dying, they said, Noach was right. Hashem hatzadik va'ani va'ami harishayim. Who's not to say that these were the last thoughts on their mind when they perished? And if not for Noach, they never would have thought these things. We don't know what the definition of success and failure is. But one thing that we know for sure, Hashem selected Noach to build the Teva for 120 years in order to influence people. Hashem didn't just take anyone for this job. He took a person that knew how to talk to you, who knew the human condition, who knew how to deal with the mind. And Yesh Merabaseinu Shedarshim, they expound, that if Noach would have lived in a generation of tzaddikim, he would have been that much greater. What does that mean? So I'm suggesting to you that what it means is, if Noach lived in a generation where the people would have been receptive to his message, he could have taken these people and developed them, nurtured them to become the Gedolei Hador. He could have made the people of his gender, if he had what to work with, if he had people to work with, he could have made them infinitely greater. Noach had that talent. But just because you have talent, you have to have the raw material. You could have the most skilled carpenter, but if he doesn't have wood, then he'll sit home and do nothing the whole day. You have a person who has skill, you got to give him the opportunity. You got to give him the raw material. I can build a house. Give me lumber, I'll build you a house. If you're not going to give me lumber, I'm going to sit and do nothing. If Noach would have lived in a generation of tzaddikim, he could have taken those tzaddikim and used his koichos, his incredible power, to make those tzaddikim into the gedolei hador, into malachei Elokim. But Noach didn't live in that generation. Noach did not live in a generation where he had who to talk to. The people that he was talking to were limited. So he did with them whatever he can do. V'yesh m'rabbeisenu, v'yesh m'shadorshim l'gnai. And some take this very same person, they say, what would it have been if Noach would have lived in a generation of Avram? L'nechshav l'klum. So we typically understand this to mean if he would have lived in the generation of Avram, he would have been nothing relative to Avram. That's not the pshat. That's not what it says. If he would have lived in Doiroi Shel Avram, the Doiroi Shel Avram corresponds to the tzaddikim of the Yesh Merabu Sein Shadoshim L'Shavach. Now let's look at our parsha. In our parsha, the people are extremely wicked. Wherever you turn, from beginning to end, parsha begins. Hashem says to Avram, "Lech lecha me'artzcha me'latcha me'savicha." Here, where you're living, Aram Naharayim, this is not a place for you. The people over here, they're low lives. I can't do anything for you in this community where you're living over here. Before the parsha begins, the first Rashi over here writes, Rashi here says, V'yei Baruch, I'm getting from the Rashi, Asher Arecha. Okay, I'm not going to spend time on this. Rashi over here, the first Rashi says, here I can't help you. The people over here, there's nothing to work with. They're not good people. There's nothing to work with here. So he goes, and what does he come across? In the parasha we learn about Sodom, the four kings and the five kings. Each one's name is more wicked than the other. Bera, Rala, Shamayim, Rala, Brios, Amraphel. We learn about Nimrod. He threw Avram into a furnace of fire. Omar, he said that Avram shall be thrown into a furnace. We learn about Paro, Melech Mitzrayim, that abducted his wife, stole his wife, was willing to murder Avraham because of his wife. And then when the war was over, he still wasn't finished, he says, Tengli HaNefesh V'Ruchush Kachloch. Go to the parasha, then we come across Hagar and all of the Agmas Nefesh that Hagar gave Sarai. So we have one story after another of coming across people, in contact with people that are no good. Not just no good, outright wicked. The end of the parasha, we deal with Hagar. Hagar gave Sarai enormous Agmas Nefesh. Avram had to save Lot from 9 wicked kings. The whole world was wicked. 4 kings against the 5 kings. Each one was more wicked than the next. The place where he came from, he was told to leave because the people there are just not, they're not material that can help Avram succeed. The Doiroi Shel Avram was infinitely worse than the Doiroi Shel Noach.
Oh, no.
That's what I'm trying to say. The people who lived, this is the trying to say Pshat and the Rashi. The people, why? It says Bera Mel, Rala Shamayim, Rala Brios, Amrafel, Rashi, Darash, each one of their names. We're dealing with 9 nations. 9 nations, and we list them all by name. And each name of the 9 nations is interpreted by Chazal, expressing a new dimension of wickedness. It was organized crime. In the generation of Noach, ki hishchis kol boser es darkoy al aretz. It was private crime. Each man was a menuvel. Each person was a menaif. Each one was a ganaf. But it wasn't organized crime. In the generation of Avram, we have 9 kings. We have kingdoms. And the kingdom is a kingdom of wickedness.
Avram had converts.
What?
Avram had converts.
Okay, that was Avram's own doing. Noah also worked his whole life to 120 years to have some converts. He didn't Oh, that's what Rashi says. That's the measure of their success. But let's discuss the generation. Let's discuss the generation. Noach lived in a generation where it says about them, Ki hishris kol bosar darkoi al haaretz. Kol bosar. It doesn't talk about kings. It talks about individuals. A wicked generation. Hashem destroyed them. And Hashem recruited Noach to be a mashpia, to influence them for good. And Noach wasn't very successful. What would have been if Noach would have lived in the generation of Avram? Avram lived in a generation of organized crime. We have Paro Melech Mitzrayim. Vayahalalu Oysa El Paro. And what do? They stole his wife. And Avram had a lie that she's not my wife, she's my brother, because they would have murdered him in cold blood. And this is the Melech, Malchus, Paro. What kind of Malchus is this? What kind of people are you dealing with? 9 kingdoms, they have a world war, and they abduct, they capture as a hostage Lot. They were trying to capture Lot as a way to draw Avram into the battle. What's going on over there? And these are nations, kings, and each king, Rashi, tells us what their name means, and we're horrified to learn the wickedness of kingdoms. You're living in a generation of people that are thoroughly wicked to the core. Why didn't Hashem destroy them? Hashem made a shvuah. I'm never going to destroy the world. Even though Hashem did destroy Sodom and its suburbs, but I'm not going to destroy the world. The Doiroi Shel Avram was a generation of wicked people that were not receptive to Musar and improvement and influence. Rashi says, if Noach would have lived in this generation of Avram, the Doiroi Shel Avram, and been given a task to go out to the world and speak to people and try to convince them that there's a creator, and their ways are not pleasing in his eyes, and they should do teshuva, and they should be better people, lo haya nechshav leklum. He would have accomplished absolutely zero. If Noach would have lived in a generation of tzaddikim, meaning a good generation, and Noach would show up one day, Noach would say to the tzaddikim, you know something? I can teach you something that you don't know. Let me nurture you. Let me develop you and make you into even greater tzaddikim. They would have listened with thirst to every word of Noach, with Noach's charisma, his way of dealing with people. He could have taken the tzaddikim and made the tzaddikim much greater. They would have left this world as being the Gedolei Hadar. But if Noach would have lived in a generation that was worse than the generation he lived in, the generation of Avram, where the people were out to lunch, thoroughly wicked, organized crime, a world that was crumbling, and Noach would go out into the world and would go out to the subway and start preaching, they would lock him up. No one would even bother to listen to one word. Noach lived in the generation somewhere in between. The people were not tzaddikim. They were not listeners. But they were not as bad as the generation of Avram. And therefore, there was a possibility that Noach would have been able to use his talents, his koiches hanefesh, to persuade them to do teshuvah, to become better people. Did he succeed? Not really. Maybe a little bit, whatever that means. Yesh Merabai Seinu and the Yesh Darshan are not arguing. There's a cup of water. There are marks. The water reaches the 50% mark. They're both saying two sides of the same coin. Yesh Merabai Seinu, they're saying Noach was a tzaddik in his generation. He was a mashpia. He affected people's lives. He spoke to them. He built the teva. He engaged them in conversation. He had an effect to a degree. There was someone to talk to, at least. It's a shame. If Noach would have lived in a generation of tzaddikim, they would have listened with thirst to his words. And he would have made them incredible people. He would have transformed the world. He could have brought Mashiach. Because not through him, he could have nurtured the tzaddikim that they should be eligible to be the Melech HaMashiach, each one in their own right. Because Noach was the master teacher, but a teacher needs someone to talk to. But if Noach would have lived in the generation of Avram, a generation that's far, far worse than his generation. It's a chiddush to say such a thing. The generation of Avram, Mr. Elman is right, I'm saying a very chiddush. The generation of Avram was worse. Organized crime. It wasn't just taiva. It was with sophistication. The crimes were sophisticated crimes. World wars. Sophistication in crime. And Noach would now go out and say, come, I want to give you a shear. They would lock him up. Who's it? He would have no effect whatsoever. He's the 50% mark. If he would have been in the generation of tzaddikim, that's the part of the cup that's half full. If he would have been in the generation of the wicked people of Avram, half empty, he would have no effect whatsoever. Why am I telling you this hakdama? All of this is a hakdama. With this hakdama, we can now begin Parshas Lech Lecha. Because Parshas Lech Lecha, we are introduced to the Noach of the generation of Avram. And who is the Noach, the Mashpia, the Tzaddik of the generation of Avram? Avram himself! Avram was put in his generation to do what? To be Mashpia upon them. Did Avram succeed or did Avram fail? Well, a simple reading of the parasha would indicate he failed. What happened to those neshamas, by the way? Gone, Chazal said they're gone. Nefesh asher asu b'choron, what became of them? Disappeared, the thin air. What?
That's
not Avram. So what would you say? You would say that just like Hashem put Noach in his generation, because Noach was had potential to work with them to some degree, and Noach failed. So Avram was put in his generation. So Avram also failed. Avram also, he was the Mashpia, Avram ho Ivri. He was on one side, and they were on the other side. And that's pretty much the way the whole parasha goes. Avram remains on his side, and the rest of the world is on their side. Avram was the Mashpia. If Noach would have been in this generation, Noach would have been a fly. He wouldn't even be on record. But Avram, he was more of a personality, it seems. But did he succeed or did he fail? At first glance, it would seem that he failed miserably. Because at the end of the parasha, the world is just as wicked as it was. But that's not correct. The emes is... The emes is that Avram's hashpa on every single thing that he touched in this week's parsha, it echoes, it lingers on Ad Hayom Hazeh. Ma'aseh Avos Sim L'Banim, when he went down to Paro, when he went down to Egypt with Sarai, they were talking about this forever. Okay, there are midrashim, the experience of Avram coming to Melech Paro, to Mitzrayim, to Paro Melech Mitzrayim, and negotiating with him, with his wife Sarai, and whatever, all the consequences, the effects lingered on forever. When Avram went to war with the four kings and the five kings, and had a conversation, Malki Tzedek Melech Shom Hotzi Lechem V'Yayin, Baruch Avram Lekel Elyoin, the events, it may seem that the world, Olam Kiminhagoy, when the parish is over, the world is still corrupt and void of any sanctity. We know that's not true. We know that Avram in this week's parasha planted seeds where wherever he went, he planted a seed. And throughout Tanakh, Ad Hayom Hazeh, those seeds are still growing. So I'm trying to say over here is as follows. Parshas Noach prepares us, sets up a stage to reveal to us that the generation of Avram that he was put into was wicked, was pathetic, was void of sanctity to a degree that is unimaginable. And we know that from the pasuk Noach ish tzadik tamim hoya bidoy roisof yesh merabo sein shdoshim l'shevach v'yesh shdoshim l'gnai. No, Noach was what he was. He was an incredible, charismatic person who had tremendous influence, and he did what he could in his generation because there are people in his generation that would listen to him to a degree. And if Noach would have been given better students, would have been given tzaddikim, he could have made them great. But if Noach, with all of his talent and charisma, would have been put up against the people, would have been put in the shoes of Avram and told to go around the world and deal with all of the situations that Avram dealt with, if you would have put Noach, Noach wouldn't survive a day. But yet Avram did survive a day. He didn't just survive Avram, he thrived. And if we're comparing Noach to Avram, not only did he thrive personally to survive, he thrived, he was mashpia, he affected the people that he came in contact with in this parsha to a degree that lingers on ad hayom hazeh. Egypt was shaken up. The only reason why Klal Yisrael was able to survive, you know why we survived? Avram already shook them up. He already, even though Paro had the chutzpah to say, Mi Hashem asher eshma b'kolo, lo yadati yas Hashem. You liar. You know who Hashem is. You don't know what happened with Avram Avinu and your ancestor. You know. You already, you know, when a person says, I didn't do it, you know what that means. When someone is challenged, did you do it? And no, I didn't do it. That's basically the admission of guilt I did. When Pyro says, Mi Hashem, you know what that means? I know who Hashem is. You know how I know who Hashem is? Because Avram already taught us who Hashem is. And therefore, although they attempted to destroy Klal Yisrael, they knew they couldn't. It was a different Egypt. When Avram dealt with the nine kings, the four and the five, he shook up the world. Malki Tzedek, at the end of the war, came out. It says it all. Baruch Avram Lekel Elyon. And then Baruch Hashem. And then he blessed Hashem. That was all a result, a consequence of Avram Avinu. He dealt with the most difficult people. The Doiroi Shel Avram. There was no generation, there was no class. Like you talk about students in the school. There was no generation that was as corrupt and evil and difficult like this generation. And the greatness of Avram Avinu was he thrived, he survived, he succeeded in influencing them and leaving his mark on them, which continues to carry on in every parasha in the Torah, Ad Hayoyim Hazeh. Okay, so that's this Yisoy, this Vart. Again, we're going back to review the Rashi Prokim. We're going back to Parshas Noach. We're relearning that Rashi, to understand what that Rashi really means. And in the process of learning that Rashi, we discover that the generation of Avram was the worst of the worst of the worst. And Noach wouldn't survive a day, but yet Avram did survive a day. And that reveals to us the greatness of Avram. The greatness of Avram of who he was, and how he was able to be mashpia, affect other people in this entire world. Av hamoin goyim nisaticha. Hashem says your name is no longer going to be called Avram, it's going to be Avraham. Why Avraham? You are the father of a multitude of nations. You have succeeded in your mission. Noach, to a degree, failed in his mission. Noach, when it was over, he wasn't a father. because there was no one to be a father to. Everyone is dead. At the end of this week's parasha, what does Hashem say? I'm changing your name. You're no longer going to be called Avram. Your name is going to be called Avraham. You're going to be the father of all of the nations. You're a mashpia. You have the ability to affect, to change people's lives. Okay, let's go to another idea. We can argue about it later. Yeah? I can't hear two voices at the same time. Let's go further. Let's now go to another basic question about this parasha. It is out of order. The parasha begins, the pasuk goes on to say, the Avram ben Chomesh v'shiv m'shana b'tzeso meichon, he was 75 years old. And he goes, and he travels, and he comes to Shechem, and he's mispalel. He comes to Ai, he's mispalel. And then he goes down to Yerushalayim, and then he goes to Mitzrayim. He's traveling all over the place. And then what happens? After Avraham goes on, and then after he comes back to Canaan, after all this happens, he goes on a tour, and then he becomes very wealthy. Hevegam leloit, ha'olechel Avram, he comes back, he's super duper wealthy, and then he leaves him, and then a war breaks out. World war breaks out. We have here for 14 years, they serve, they rebel, and in the process, what's the collateral damage? Vayavoy ha'polit, oig melech ha'boshim comes and tells him, guess what, Avram? Got good news to tell you. Your nephew is a hostage. He's been taken hostage. Avraham calls up his SWAT team, 380 men, Eliezer, a one-man SWAT team, and they go into action. Even in a motion picture, they couldn't pull this off. And he takes down the whole world. Chazal tell us, if you make a calculation, take out all the big books, all the midrashim, and Mechol Mishra can do this really, really good, take out all the charts and calculations and numbers, and you will discover that the World War and the Bris Ben Abisarim took place when Avram was 73 years old. When it says in the pasuk, "Vayavo ha-polit, vayagel Avram ho-ivri," who is the polit? Og. Og melech ha-bashan. What is Og? Ayin gimel. Take out the vav. Ayin gimel, that's a simen. At this moment, make all the calculations, Avram was 73 years old when he went out on a suicide mission to rescue his nephew Lot. And he succeeded. And right after he succeeded, it was the Bris Ben Absarim. That's the Pashtus. And then after all of that, oh, now 2 years later, Vayoymer Hashem el Avram, Lech Lecha, Be'artzecha, Melatecha, Be'savicha, Ela Oretz Asher Arek. So when Avram was told in the beginning of Parashas Lech Lecha to go to Eretz Yisrael, to go out and take possession of the land, he already had in his back pocket the Bris Ben Habasarim, and he already had in his back pocket a guarantee, a promise that he'll have children, and he already had conquered the entire world. Okay, the Pasha says that, it's incredible. He already conquered the world. The four kings and the five kings, he already wiped them all out. He got back Lot, and he goes back home to Haran, to the little shtetl. And now Hashem says, go now to Eretz Yisrael. And he goes, and then he goes down to Egypt. Egypt, it seems, wasn't involved in this war of the four kings. The five kings did not affect Egypt. Egypt was out of the picture of this war between the four and the five kings. So the question is, if you make all the calculations, and Chazal are pretty clear, it's not accepted by everyone. There are different calculations, but I think Ramchal, you'll acknowledge that many Mepharshim learned that the parasha is out of order. According to Seder Olam, various Midrashim, it's out of order. Why then did the Torah write the parashos out of order? Well, the Torah wants to mislead us. The Torah has an agenda. What's the agenda here? Why can't the Torah Ein mutam u'me'ochar b'Torah. There is no order. All that means is there's no chronological order. But there is order. There is Seder. There is definitely order in the chaos. So the Torah presents the events of this week's parasha in a very precise order.
Your volume dropped.
Do you hear me now? Do you hear me now? Hello? Yeah, okay. So why did the Torah present the sequence of events in this particular order? Let the Torah start off with a story where Lot was very wealthy, and Lot decided he pardoned on Me'olai. Lot goes down to Egypt, and let the Torah begin with a different sequence. There are different opinions. I'm getting a little bit confused, but there are different opinions as exactly the sequence of events. But one thing comes out very clear. According to most of the commentators, the event that's taking place in the beginning of the parasha is not what happened first. This happened much later on. The Bris Ben Abisarim and the Melcham of the four kings, the five kings, already happened. So why? I think the answer is very, very important. We as the descendants of Avram, when we learn Chumash, thank you very much for the coffee. Thank you very much. We as the descendants and the children of Avram, when we study the life of Avram, the Torah is speaking to us. And the Torah is telling us, don't make calculations. The Torah says, Vayoymer Hashem, there's a message being said to us. The bottom line for us is, Vayoymer Hashem el Avram, Lech lecha. Hashem is telling Klal Yisrael, go to Eretz Yisrael, devote yourself to Hashem's service. If the Torah would present the events the way it happened in chronological order, it would poison our minds. Avram, you would say, listen, you know why? Do you know why Avram went? He abandoned his family, his avicha, his family, his hometown. It's because Hashem already promised him. Hashem made with him a bris ben habesarim, made a covenant that he's going to give him the land. And Hashem took him out, vayoytzi oysa hachutza, count the heavens, count the stars. Look at the stars, koye zaracha. And as far as the military strength, I'm invincible. I conquered nine kings. I knocked them all out. Avram here is the most powerful person in the world. Hashem took him out of this world to show him the stars, to promise him children. Hashem already made with him a bris ben habesarim to guarantee a bris. That you will have Eretz Yisrael. Oh, it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer now when Hashem says, Lech lecha, me'artzicha, umimoylatecha, umibesavicha, eloaretz asharecha. Big deal. If you're the most powerful person in the world, and Hashem already put in writing and signed a document that you're going to have children, you're going to have Eretz Yisrael. That's right. Now it's time to make good. To make good on Hashem's promise. What's the big deal? What's the big deal? Now, even that, it would be extremely misleading. Extremely misleading. The whole Avram Avinu, the whole essence of who he was, is Emunah. Avram Avinu is the one, the Yerusha, the legacy of Avram Avinu is Emunah. Emunah Peshuta. On Rosh Hashanah, when we dwell upon Emunah, what do we say? Lechtech acharai b'midbar, b'eretz loy zerua. Hashem told us to leave Egypt, to go out into the desert, the Saudi Arabian desert, sandstorms with just nothing, complete nothingness. To do that requires incredible Emunah. Lechtech acharai b'amidbar b'eretz lezerua. Where did Klal Yisrael gain that strength? From Avraham Avinu. He was the father of Emuna. And the Torah is saying testimony. His Emuna was rock solid. If we're going to present the information to you in the sequence of events the way it happened, unfortunately, the human being is weak, is feeble, and is not going to accept the depth of Emun, not going to appreciate the true depth of Emuna that Avraham Avinu possessed and bequeathed to his descendants. Because what's going to happen if we present it in the sequence of events the way it happened? It wasn't a big deal. It wasn't such a great nesoyon to show this Emuna by leaving your homeland, your family, your father, and going into the unknown, into the unknown. We'll say, listen, there was already a war. He already showed how powerful he was. He already was promised by the Bris Ben Abasarim. It's not true. The Torah is telling us it's misleading. It's true there were events which happened, but there's a lot more to it. And it's very misleading if you just look at the events at face value. It is necessary for us as students of Avraham Avinu to be presented front and center that Avraham Avinu was the ultimate Maimon. And we begin the story of Avram with an act of pure emunah. Give up everything for Hashem. This is his legacy. Don't confuse me with the facts, because the facts are misleading. They're not wrong. The facts are true, but they're misleading. And in order that we, Maminim, B'nai Maminim, should be taught to emphasize the pure emuna, we begin with a story of pure emuna, and then we fill in some of the details of how Avraham Avinu came to this sequence of events. Okay, let's go to another quick idea of Ish v'Ishtoi. Avraham Avinu comes to Mitzrayim. This is a theme which goes through the entire parasha. He comes to Egypt, he leaves Eretz Yisrael, he travels through the land, and there's a famine, so he goes down to Egypt. And when he comes to Egypt, he says to his wife, Sarai, I want you to lie. If they ask you who I am, tell them I am your brother. The Chazal say, it says in the Pasuk, Imri no achoy si'at. So it should say, Imri no achi. You said not achoisi sister. You should say that I'm your brother. So Chazal said that he said to her, "I want you to lie." So she said to him, "I can't say a lie. I can't do that. It's a lie for me to go say that you are my brother. That's a lie." So okay, I'll tell you what. I'll lie. You just be quiet. I will say, "Achoisi, you're my sister. So you don't have to lie. Just be quiet. Don't argue. Don't protest. L'chatchila imrina. I want you to say that I am your brother. If you don't want to say a lie, I'll be the liar. I'll say you're my sister and you'll be quiet. And that way they won't kill me. They won't kill me. They won't worry. I don't understand something. What difference does it make if you're Sarai's husband or you're Sarai's brother? You're in the way. Paro wants this woman. So if you're the husband, they'll kill you. Or being a brother, being a brother is any different? I don't want Paro to marry my sister. Why is that going to solve the problem? Why being a brother is going to be any different? The answer is very simple. Egypt was a very sophisticated society. But there was one thing that they did not have. Mitzrayim is called the Ervas Haaretz. It was a place of promiscuity, Gili Arayos, There's no such thing in Mitzrayim. There's no appreciation in Mitzrayim as loyalty in marriage. If you tell them, this is what I'm trying to bring out an idea. If you tell them that we're husband and wife, what? You're married? Who gets married today? Look at New York. Is the governor married? All these big celebrities. The mayor was our old mayor. What's his name? Forgot his name. Bloomberg. Was he married? No, he has a girlfriend. He lives with someone. The governor's married. Cuomo is not married. He has a girlfriend. All of these celebrities. What? She left him. All of these big celebrities. They're not public. Chas Shalom and Khan will be a president. Won't even be married. They were in the past. They were Bachram. They were Bachram. They were presidents. But marriage? Huh. Who cares about marriage? Egypt is a land of promiscuity. It's a land, it's called the Ervas Haaretz. You're coming here with a wife. Wow. You're a celebrity, Avram. Everyone knows about you. You're coming here with your wife. You're going to be in the papers. Your relationship promotes marriage. In Egypt, there's no marriage. You do whatever you want. You live with someone, this institution of marriage is antithetical to who we are here in Egypt. We're not going to kill Avram because he's married to Sarai. We're going to kill Avram because you represent, your very existence is a promotion of the institution of marriage, which in Egypt, we don't have marriage in Egypt. Egypt is the Ervas Haaretz. Brother and sister? Oh, family! Hey, in the mafia, that's what counts. Family is family. You help out your own family. But we don't want people here who are the poster child for the institution of marriage in a land that is called the Ervas Haaretz, which means the land of promiscuity. You're a moshul, a dugma of something which we cannot tolerate in this country. Not you, the person, but the institution of marriage. And Avraham Avinu had to say to Sarai, you know, we better keep a low profile. We're not married. We're not here to promote, to make an amendment in the constitution of Egypt that there should be something called marriage, which means a commitment between man and a woman, and they're forbidden to anyone else. They're committed to each other, no one else. Avraham Avinu went to Egypt to learn what marriage is all about. He went to Egypt to lie. It was hashkacha pratis. When you lie, when you do an avera, you grow from the avera. The greatest rechush, the greatest gift Avram received by going to Egypt wasn't all the wealth. He appreciated what it means to have a wife. Through the experience of being threatened, you're not allowed to be married. Marriage is a curse to society. It limits you. And Avram had to fight for it. Had to fight for it, had to go through this whole experience. He appreciated what it means to be married. Okay, now we go further. Avraham Avinu, we have the whole story the four kings, five kings. He says to Hashem, Matitein li, v'anochi holich hariri, v'mesek beis huda mesek Eliezer. So Hashem says, no, you can have a child. Oh, I'm going to have a child. Who am I going to have the child from? My wife. Who else, right? My wife. And then what happens? No children, 10 years. And all of a sudden, there's another challenge to marriage. Sarai gives Avram Hagar. She's not a wife. She was a shifcha. This was another event that challenged his marriage. And then they had a child, Yishmael. And Avram said, Lu Yishmol Yichya Lefanecha. And Hashem said, no, no, no. the child that's going to be your legacy is going to come through your wife, Sarai. And then Hashem, the ultimate, Hashem changes her name from Sarai to Sarah. There are four events in this week's parasha where Avram is being taught the value of marriage. He comes to a land where the fact that he's married is a threat to his life. Because in that society, there's no such thing. Number two, the event with Hagar. Sarai brings Hagar into the marriage. Number three, Hashem, they have a child, Yishmael, and Hashem rejects Yishmael. And Hashem says, no, you're going to have a child through your wife, not through the Shifcha. And number four, there is the change of name. The parasha, this parasha sets up one of the main yesodos of Yadus, and that is the Jewish home. Parashas Lech Lecha represents, you know, Avram Avinu. But it's not just Avram Avinu, it's the Beis Avram. The Beis Avram is the sanctity of the home of Avram, Avraham and Sarah. We take it for granted, Baruch Hashem, because Avram Avinu, he changed the whole world. But these were things that were not necessarily givens in ancient times. And the procession of the parasha from beginning to end shows this development in appreciating there's something called marriage, something called having a wife, there's something called having a child through your wife, and there's something about who your wife is, her name, what she represents. There are many different dimensions in the establishment of the Beis Avram. Okay, boys, have a wonderful Shabbos. Be well to everyone. Thank you for coming and joining me on Erev Shabbos, Parashas Lech Lecha. Stay dry, stay warm.
Shabbos, good
Shabbos. Stay safe, good Shabbos. Good Shabbos, everyone.
Shabbos, everybody.
By the way, if anybody reads the Yakeh, there's a vote for Trump full page ad.
Who put the ad in?
FJJ has a
Meshaberach.
Hmm.
Not
FJJ, Shabbat Shalom. The Jewish viewers has a Meshaberach for him.
Yes, I'm listening. Good Shabbos. I'm here. I'm listening. Good Shabbos. Yes.
Hello?
Yes, I'm listening. I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here.
My Rebbetzin wants to know, what would have happened if Avram would have been in Darshal Noyach?
It would have been an overkill.
Been no?
No, it would not. He didn't fit. He would have been an overkill. It would have been too much. You need the right person for the right people. It would have been too qualified. When someone is overqualified for a job, it's always a disaster.
So they wouldn't have listened to him anyway. They might have killed him for, you know.
They would not have, because he wouldn't have been the match. He would not. If you have you go and you hire someone who has a PhD in some field, and you hire him as a factory, it's not going to work out. He'll go meshuggah. You need the right person for the right job. Avraham was the right person for the generation. He was an extremely powerful person. You deal with extremely wicked people. He was the right person for the job. If you would have put Avraham Avinu in the generation of Noach, he may have been extremely powerful, but it probably wouldn't have worked because he would have been overqualified.
Right, so your pshat, yesh dorshim l'gnai, is not the gnai of Noach, the gnai of the generation.
Right. No, exactly.
If Noach would have been, they would have been wicked.
No, the Gnai is Noach was at the 50% mark, which means he did not have enough power to influence people that were extremely wicked. He had just enough power to influence people that were 50% weak.
That's what it means. If he would have been in the generation of Avram, then the people would have been like Gnai. No, the wickedness would have been bad. No one could.
He would not have had any influence. Lo haya nechshav leklom. He would have no success. He would not be able to influence the people at
right,
all.
But he would try.
And it would go nowhere.
And he had no success. So does that make him less of a tzaddik?
No, he is what he is.
Right, but the Gnai is that, if a tzaddik comes and works on the generation, it's the chutz for the people. Right? You're saying
saying Gnai means, it means that he just doesn't have the potential.
But I'm telling him, Shad, that Gnai doesn't go on Noach. It goes on the people of the generation. If you have a tzaddik like Avram in the generation, so he helps the generation because his influence is seen. So it's not a Gnai. There's a good point. There's something good in it. It leaves a good Rashi.
If
you have Noach would be there.
I hear what you're saying, but that's not what Rashi says.
That was a horrible dark.
That's not what Rashi says. Rashi says, good job. I'll talk about your question. Rashi says, we're looking at Noach. Tzadik koyo bidoy roisof. Yesh merabai seinu shadarshim oisoy l'shevach. They look at Avram. Now, Noach. Noach, make believe Noach is at the 50 degree mark. That means 50% of the cup is empty. And 50,
okay, I understand that. But what is Darshim Lignai?
Lignai means they're focusing on the part that's empty. They're focusing.
You're not going anywhere more.
They're focusing on the 50% that's missing. That's Lignai.
I'm looking at it a different way because with the Gnai, there was no one left afterwards. When Noach was finished with the story, there was a marble, all the Gnai was gone. No one was left.
We're not discussing results.
Left was good.
We're not discussing results. We're discussing.
But I'm discussing this.
So you're saying another pshat? You're saying another pshat.
There was good and there was bad, you know. But the bad had a good influence on it a little bit. Hopefully they could do tshuva or whatever. Because that was the difference. Once you took away the option of a mabul,